Welcome back to the Godly Young Men Podcast, episode 111. We've got a hopefully what you think is a great episode today. This was a great idea from Joe, where we are both coming to the table with kind of our top five best pieces of advice that have been given to us, kind of best, whether it be sayings or just general advice that's been given to us as young men, as godly young men. And I was telling Joe, as I was kind of putting my list together, it was a little tough because it was like, this is not things I've discovered along the way.
Right.
This is not even things that, like, advice that I would give to somebody else. No, this is advice that others have given to us. Like, strive for greatness is definitely something I want to pass on to my kids. That's not exactly a piece of advice that was given to me. And so it was a little bit different, different of an episode. But Joe, any introductory thoughts as we kind of get into this?
No, I was thinking through, a lot of this comes from my dad, so shout out to my dad. He's got a bazillion of one quotes that that I love. This is advice or things that we found very helpful. Things that, have been told to us. Some of these, one of mine is a straight up quote, but I find it from somebody previously, I think a founding father actually. It was given to me in a time where I thought was, very helpful. And so some of this is not just from, again, my dad or whatever it is. Some of this is just general advice, but it was opportune time. Some things that I think is worth passing on to you guys, and hopefully it'll help you because I think these things have helped us along the way. So Will, we also, full disclosure, we have not shared this with one another. I do not know what Will's five are. He does not know what mine. Correct. My five are in front, but he's not looking at
it. I've got the mic right in front, so I can't see it.
There you go. So he can't see mine, and it's a tiny font. I don't even know that you can read that. I can barely read that. So he doesn't see. So these are, we're reacting in real time the same way you will. So get us to number one. What's your number one?
So I'm going to go five to one.
Number five.
Yeah, I'm going to go five to one. My number five, and I'll also probably share who all kind of gave me this piece of advice. So this piece of advice came from, not my first boss, but for my first big boy job, basically, my boss gave me this piece of advice, and that is, other people's perception is their reality. Hmm. You hear, and why that has always stuck with me is essentially what he was trying to get across to me was like, you might get upset that people are perceiving your behavior as a certain way, but that is their reality, and so that's something you have to deal with, like, in the sense of as a manager or as somebody who, is leading people. The way they perceive you is there. If they perceive you as somebody who's lazy and is always trying to shirk his duty and wants to delegate everything, never do anything, like, that is their reality. That is their perception. So therefore, that is their reality, and there's probably a reason for that. And so I guess I've always, why that stuck with me is because you hear a lot about, hey, you shouldn't care what people think, and there's an element to which that's true. But in the positions that I've been in life, for my career, which is leading people, manager, that kind of thing, I do have to take that into consideration. Like, what other people perceive of me is kind of their reality. And so I have to be very mindful of that with the words that I say, with the way that I talk to people, with the things, the way that I carry myself, the way that they see me interact, the way that they see me work. What they perceive about me is their reality. And so I don't know, that, again, that's like 6 years ago now, 5-6 years ago, and that has always stuck with me.
I use that in therapy quite a bit, actually. There perception is reality. So I love that piece of advice. I think that's fantastic. My piece of advice,
number five,
I was given this by my first, maybe my second supervisor, when I was going for my practicum and clinicals and such and getting my my degree and in professional counseling. And she said, don't work harder than your clients. Don't work harder than your clients. And the reason this is relevant to you guys is like, cool, if I ever have clients, I won't work harder than that. The reason this is relevant is, you don't want to work harder than the person who is supposed to be taking responsibility. What I mean by that is, like, you have the friend that you're just trying super hard to get him to, man, if he could just do this, he'd be so good at what he's doing. He'd keep his job if he could just do that. Or with your wife down the line, like, man, if I just want it so much for them. I want them to do this. I want them to succeed. And so you find that you spend so much of your life really wanting it for somebody, and you're thinking about it. You're spending late nights saying, man, how can I get them to come around? How can I? And it just kind of hit me like, and this, when she said this, like, don't work harder than your clients.
You can't manhandle it.
You can't manhandle it. This is, if they want it, they want it. So you can lead them to it. You can give them all the tools. At the end of the day, you can't make somebody want something else. And I've used this way more than just in my therapy practice of, like, it's really good when it comes to setting boundaries, because you can try and try and try and try to help somebody else. Set those boundaries and realize at some point You can't manufacture their effort. You can't make them care about anything. Don't work harder than your clients. Don't spend all your time trying to figure out how to help your friends and help everybody else and help your girlfriend and everything else if they don't want it. Yeah. Is kind of the point of that.
I like that. I like that a lot. How much to add? I think that's a really good piece of advice. My number four was given to me by my current boss, actually. And he's got some great stuff. I was trying to pick one, and this is definitely the one that stuck with me the most. And that is, what's focused on gets fixed. What's focused on gets fixed. And
that's good.
So in the context of, obviously, of my work environment, I'm the operations director for the Chick-fil-A in Spring Hill, Tennessee, where I live. And in a fast food business that does that much volume, there is just always something that we need to be doing, fire to put out, metrics to be watching, numbers to, like, just, it's a very wide range of things. And the point he made is, like, if you want to improve in this particular metric, you and your team need to focus on it. When it gets focused on, it will get fixed. Because it's so difficult in the business that we're in to focus on every single thing. Obviously, that's kind of part of our job, and so we do our best. But, like, if we devote special attention and focus to a certain area, it will get fixed, but you have to focus on it. And why that applies to everybody, not just people who are, you know, higher up managers in restaurants, is because it applies to yourself as well. If you really want to improve your diet and exercise, focus on that and really focus on that, and it'll get fixed. If you want to improve your relationship with your wife and you want to communicate better with her, then you need to focus on it and it'll get fixed. Again, I could keep going with examples like your spiritual life, your Bible study, your academics. Like, what's focused on gets fixed. And if you're just kind of like remaining at surface level on everything in your life and not really zooming in on anything, you're going to have a hard time juggling all those things, as opposed to, man, I really want to fix this in my life. Well, then focus. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. I like that, because it's also balancing things. It's like, if everything gets 10%, I got 10 things that get 10% of me, nothing's going to get done. Focus on it. Put your time and an attention and a focus into one. I'd love that advice. That's who'd you say gave that to you?
My current boss. Yeah. Our current operator. Yeah.
That's good stuff. That's really, really good stuff. Yeah. I don't have much more to add to that. The second one is my dad would riff off this one. So the quote is, the harder I work, the luckier I get. He used to say, the harder I work, the more opportunities you'll get. He used to say that. And I think it is a riff off of this one, because there's a lot of people that go through life like,
I just have bad luck.
I just got bad luck. You know, just nothing yeah, goes my way.
This is really good.
Nothing goes my way, and I just don't ever have any opportunities. And my dad was always like, look, man, if you work hard, you're going to have the opportunities. They will come your way. You'll find yourself getting lucky. And so, again, I think he was quoting, I can't remember if that's Benjamin Franklin or one of those back then, of the harder I work, the luckier I get. But it really made it tangible to me. That's why that advice stuck with me, is instead of I'm just this passive person in my life of maybe good things happen and maybe they don't, it's like, you know what? Work your tail off and see what happens. And I have found that to be true. The harder I work, the more opportunities I get, the more people that I talk to, the more opportunities I get down the road, where people, you know, you shake some hands and you go meet some people, and next thing you know, they're sending work your way or whatever it may be. Like, be opportune, work hard, and you'll find that opportunities start flowing to you.
I love this one. What it reminds me of, I've heard this one, I think, in sports talk or whatever, but fortune favors the bold.
Yeah.
Heard that, like, luck is the residue of design, things like that, where essentially, like, it's not really luck.
Right.
There are, you know, because, you know, this might hurt Joe, you know, this might hurt Joe a little bit.
I know where it's going.
Banging on the Chiefs. So all the Chiefs are just lucky, and unfortunately for me,
they are.
The Patriots. Patriots are just lucky. Luck is the residue of design. Like, there is some element, sure, like, luck exists, but at the same time, if somebody's getting lucky over and over and over again, it's probably not luck. And where I also think about this, I'm reading a book right now that basically made the point, and something you said sparked this. There are two types of people in life. People who basically will go and like take control of their life and make their life what they want their life to be. And then there are the people who will let life come to them. Mm. And essentially, like, oh, like you said, I wonder what opportunities will come my way. I wonder, you know, basically kind of sit on their hands and wait for stuff to happen to them. And then there's the people that are like, I want to shoot for this. I want this promotion. I want this job. I want to start this business. I want to marry this girl. And they take control of their life. Yeah. And I never really thought about it before. Like, yeah, that's pretty much the two categories people are in.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that's – I feel like that's somewhat tied to what you're saying. It's essentially, the harder that you work and the more that you take control, it's less luck and it's just more opportunity. Yeah,
it makes things tangible. You know, it gives you control over chaos in life that you don't control. You can always control how hard you work. Don't control the luck. Don't control a lot of things. You can always control your work ethic, and I think that's important.
Yeah, so my number three is, I'm having to come up with something like small to put on the thing that I flash up on the screen that tells us what's coming next. Have an elevated mindset. And what I mean by this, what I mean more specifically is what I was told by, this was somebody that I worked with over the last year or so, who's now moved on to other things. But he said, always think, have the mindset of the next position that you want in life. Mm. So essentially,
I like that.
Let's say, so currently I'm the operations director. Next step for me would be the operator of a restaurant. If I want to get in that position, I need to go ahead and be thinking, having the mindset of what would the operator be thinking right now? Even though I'm not the operator, what would I be thinking? We teach this to our team members at Chick-fil-A. Like, if you want to be promoted to, let's say, a shift leader, then even though you're currently a team member, try to think like a shift leader and always be in that mindset. Like, what would a shift leader be doing right now? How would a shift leader respond to this joke that was made? How would a shift, like, again, and I feel like that is just such a great piece of advice, because it serves you so well in the sense of, and it reminded me of what you brought up before with Atomic Habits, of like, think like a healthy person.
Yeah.
Think like a righteous person. Like, what would a healthy person do right now? And having that elevated mindset is going to better. So let's say that I do become an operator at that point, you know, at some point. If I get that, then it's not going to be, oh man, this is brand new to me. What do I do? I've been trying to think like that and have that perspective for years now. One more example I'll give, Joe, and then I'm curious your thoughts on this.
That's great. Yeah.
I really want to be, you know, somebody who I really want to get married. What would a married person do right now? How would a married person be looking at that girl? How would a married person be spending their time? How would a married person be spending their money? Might not be the perfect example, but similarly, if you want to get to a position in life, job, again, marriage, whatever, start thinking in that mode and have that elevated mindset. Does that make sense?
I love that. I love that. Yeah, I was thinking about that of, I'm not one of those that, what's the book, The Secret, where what you put out into the world, it comes back to you.
Oh, yeah.
There is a level of manifestation, like manifesting something, that is rather legit. I'm not, you know, some Eastern religion guru type of thing. Like, I don't believe in all that garbage. On the other hand, there's a level of manifesting of, like, the people that think that way are going to be the people that move up. And you can look at it and say, you know, well, maybe that's just the what you're putting out into the universe type of thing. Or you looking at it and say, the right people are going to see that you have the right mindset. They're going to see that you're responding to ways to things in a more mature manner and in a better way, whatever it is, because you're already thinking about the next thing. I was thinking as you were talking, I had the opportunity when I was young to play up a level. So I would be in like the 14 unders and I'd be able to
play hockey, right?
For hockey, and I'd be able to play 16 unders. They'd put me on an older team, and it helped because it kind of prepped you for like what is about to come. What I need to be thinking like the 16 unders, and you come down and you play like that in the 14 unders. And so often, if you're not careful, you find yourself playing like the 14 unders and then maybe playing the 16 unders, and you're not really using the skills that you've learned. You're not really thinking about that next step. So that's kind of what was going through my mind, is it was such a helpful thing to be able to see, what does that next step look like? Can I elevate my game there? And then 14 unders became a lot more manageable for me. I ended up playing a lot better because I had seen that next step and I was already thinking along those lines. So yeah, I think that's great advice. My number three, another dadism. If you don't want to go where that road leads, don't even look down, is what he said. Don't start going down it. Don't even look down it. If you know where it leads, you know that you're going to potentially impregnate your girlfriend, and that's going to start with you guys staying up late without your parents, you know,
watching kissing, Netflix and chill.
Exactly. Yeah. Under the blanket. You know where it goes. I don't have to tell you where that goes. You know where this goes. Everybody knows where this goes. Don't even start down that path, because we start down, it's like, oh, I'll turn around. I'll flip the Yui. It's okay. I'll get there. You know, I'm only going to go a little bit.
Yeah.
You won't. Trust me. And you say, well, I did last Friday. We ended up stopping. Okay. Good for you. It's not going to happen. You know what I mean? Like those things, you know where it goes. And this goes not just with the, like any mistake in life. You know that if you are
being shady at work,
like I was going to say, shaving things, time off the time clock, things like that, or maybe spending a little too much, you're clocking in 15 minutes earlier than maybe you should, or whatever it is, those things will catch up to you. You know where that leads. You know that that's going to reflect poorly on you. Your boss is going to bust you, whatever it is. If you know where that road goes, if you know where it leads, don't even go down it.
Yeah, I think of Psalm 1. I always think of Psalm 1 whenever this is brought up, of like, blessed is the man who doesn't even walk in the counsel of the ungodly.
That's right.
Doesn't sit in the seat of the scornful, doesn't stand in the path of sinners, doesn't even get anywhere close to it. And there is that idea of, again, you kind of know what's coming, and you have the self-awareness and also the, I guess, wisdom and discernment would be the best words to use to say, I'm not even going to go down that path. And obviously the girlfriend example is the perfect example, or you know, pornography of like, okay, so if I have my phone in my room, like you know where this type of stuff goes, and getting out ahead of it and deciding for yourself to have that self-discipline, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stop, not like you said, I'm not going to stop at third base.
Right.
I'm going to drop the bat and go back to the dugout. Like that to me, I love this piece of advice. That's great. That's really good.
What's your number two?
Yeah, my number two, this one's for my dad. And I think this is just incredible, incredible advice in the society that we live in now. He taught me when I was very young, don't ever let divorce be an option. Don't ever let divorce be an option. My dad comes from a family of divorce. When he was 15, parents split up. And I remember where I was when I was 15. Can't imagine what that must have been like. And he is that is not a rare story for people. Yeah. For I think to me, and I think this is a product of having kids, one of the saddest things for me to even think about is like somebody like Jackson's age, or really Jackson, because he would remember it, having his parents split up. Like it's to me, it's the most tragic thing that I could even think of like – if we had to tell Jackson, like, I'm going away for, you're going to see me in 2 weekends. Like, it's just awful.
Oh, yeah.
Don't ever let divorce be an option. And so when he gave me that advice, it was like, when you go into a relationship, which specifically when you go into marriage, like, you can't ever have that on the table. That does not need to be at the back of somebody's mind of saying, well, you know, I guess there's always divorce. Like, absolutely not. There always needs to be we're going to work this out, kind of because we have to work this out. And I saw – it's interesting, Joe. I saw a post on Facebook recently that is one of those, like – I don't even know the word – like cheesy posts where it was a woman posting and it was meant to get a lot of shares. Like you can clearly tell. And it said the caption was, we let divorce be an option. Mm-hmm. And the point that they were trying to make is like that way my husband knows that I still choose him and I have the choice to walk away. And like I kind of get what it was saying. But I just think overall, like, man, in your marriage, don't ever use the word – don't let it be in your vocabulary. You need to have the perspective and framework and mindset of we are in this till one of us dies. Divorce is not an option. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I hate that post.
I should have sent it to you guys.
I hate that idea.
I was like, what?
That I choose him. You chose him at the altar. You chose him once. That doesn't change. Well, I chose to have my kid. You know, I just remind my kid of how much that I keep him alive and I feed
him.
We
leave adoption as an option.
Yeah, like, exactly. But just to let him know how much I care. No. Right. How stupid is that? I'm sorry. Don't let the word enter your vocabulary. That's such good advice. My dad came from a broken home as well. His dad left when he was 2 years old. It affects him. You know, it
does.
These things reverberate. I now work in this for a living. I have more horror stories from divorce than you could possibly imagine. The kids from divorce that, you know, maybe they're seeing me in their 30s and it just devastated them. I've worked with the kids in the middle of a divorce as they're going through it. I've worked with the parents on both sides of the divorce. It is brutal. It wrecks everything. So just delete it from your vocabulary in your marriage. I think that's great advice. My number two advice, I've mentioned this one on the podcast before. Stupid people will get you killed.
This is a classic.
This is classic from my dad. It's one of his most well-known quotes. We talk about the friends, but legitimately, stupid people will get you killed. This has saved me from a lot. I'm going to put this on the – there's a other side of this, which is so far as it depends on you, don't put your fate in the hands of stupid people. That was another thing that he used to tell us. And yeah, it sounds mean to say stupid people. It just is, right?
Yeah, it's just how it is.
It's just how it is. Stupid people will get you killed, but as far as it depends on you, don't put your fate in the hands of stupid people. Meaning, if you can tell, my dad's kind of a control freak in ways. Love my dad to death. I don't really see him as a control freak, but a lot of it is like, hey, man, pay attention. You can't just let somebody else dictate your life. Well, you work hard. You take control. You know, you make sure that you're not putting your fate in the hands of dumb people. Like, you take control. And don't be an idiot is kind of the point. And I love that. And that helped me a lot because it's so easy to just like, oh, man, I just chose the wrong friends. No, stupid people will get you killed. And my dad knows. He had bad friends growing up. He had people that did a lot of dumb stuff with him. Didn't serve him super well. So this is coming from, you know, a personal place for him. But not putting your fate in the hands of stupid people. Yeah, you want to be in control. Obviously, God's in control of your destiny. But you kind of want to be in control of your own destiny instead of being at the whim of everybody else.
There's an element of this that's like, okay, if I'm going to ruin my – if my life's going to get ruined, if I'm going to get myself killed, if I'm going to have something really bad happen, I want it to be my fault, not somebody else's fault. Exactly. Like, that's not, you know, that might sound kind of selfish, but it's like I don't want – to exactly what you're saying, look back and be like, man, if only this person hadn't done. No, I guess I have that mindset as well of like, if there's something that's going to go wrong in my life, I want it to be my fault, not somebody else's fault. And so, yeah, I'm obviously a big believer in this one as well. Like, just as we've said before, do not hang out with knuckleheads. Don't, you know which friends of yours are going the right direction and which ones aren't, which ones have a lot going on upstairs and which ones don't have a lot going on upstairs, if you know what I mean. And don't hang out with dumb people. Yeah, I don't have a lot to add, but that was kind of where my mind went. My number one, we ready for this?
Yep.
My number one, also my dad. My mom a little bit as well, but this is mainly my dad. Life is not about you. And in parentheses, when I was writing it down, I put, sorry for the podcast, suck it up, buttercup. Like, I have such an aversion, and I think this is because this is what, and I'm very grateful that my parents ingrained this in me, that life is not about me. Because if there is anything that you see in the society, first of all, it is that young people do think life revolves around them, what they want to do, you know, even from the time of, you know, toddlers and 5 and 6 year olds and 10, 11, 12, like, you just can tell when kids have been raised thinking that life is all about them, what they want to do. But man, it is just so frustrating to me to see parents that coddle kids to the point where not even just always letting them do what they want to do, but like, don't ever let them fail. Or, I'd love to put my kid in this event, sport, whatever, musical, but man, you know, he might not be very good at it. And it's like, you do not want your kid, you do not want your child getting to a point where everything has been perfectly curated for them to where they never have any failure. And like, life is not all about you.
Right.
It is not all about, I've brought this example up before of like, you know, my wife was like, did it ever bother you that your dad missed a lot of your basketball games? I was like, no. Yes, it would have been nice for him to be there and like, it would have been great. But like, I knew he was preaching on the weekends. He was gone on Saturdays. My world was not crumbling because my dad was not at my basketball games. Like, that's something, and maybe because they pounded this into my head, but like, life is not about me. And if I was just going to make the biggest deal about the fact that my dad wasn't at my basketball game, like, there are bigger, more important things than you. I think about, just sorry to ramble here, no, but like, kids trying out for sports teams. Oh, you don't make the team. Oh, you know, like, that's how life works.
Right.
There's going to be kids that are better than you at that sport. There's going to be kids that are better than you at that instrument. There's going to be kids that are smarter than you. And I just really want to pass this on to my kids as well. Like, we want you to be successful. We're going to set you up as best we can. We're going to give you a great education. We're going to give you great opportunities. I'm going to be practicing ball with you out in the backyard to make sure that you're a very talented athlete. But life is not about you. And if things don't go your way, you cannot just wallow and whine and, oh, you know, I'm just such a victim. Like, suck it up at the end of the day. And sorry for anybody that thinks that that's not a proper thing to say. It's just kind of the lingo. But I don't know. What thoughts do you have on this? As you can tell, I'm pretty passionate about this one. Like, I really want to make sure my kids grow up knowing life is not about them.
Perspective is the word that came to mind. Perspective. When things get, like, so zeroed in, you want to just step back, forest for the trees, realize life goes on without you. You are not the end all be all. I remember, I think it was in one of Francis Chan's books where he talked about, we all think we're kind of the main character in the movie.
It's Crazy Love, I think.
Yeah, I think it's Crazy Love. There you go. And we all think we're the main character in the movie. And what we are is like the
back of an extra's head. Exactly.
Yeah. Like the back of the head is as the great scene in this forever long movie. And it's like, oh, there I am. And we think that we are the main character. We think we're the focal point and everybody's here to just basically worship us. Like, it ain't about you. Yeah. There are bigger fish to fry in the world. There are bigger things taking place. And at the end of the day, it's about glorifying God. It's not about our wants, our whims, our needs, our everything else. It doesn't mean that we are insignificant. God has given us value. He's placed the highest value on us. On the other hand, that's the only way we know that is because of Christ, which is a perspective gaining thing of like, Christ died for the entire world. It's not about me. Yeah. It's really not about me. So I love that piece of advice. That may sound harsh, but I think it's brass tacks. It's reality. It's
the way it is.
Exactly. It's just the way that it is. It's not about you. So I think that's a great number one.
What's yours? I'm curious. Here we go.
This actually, so I know my brother is, he doesn't, I can't remember who he attributes it to. He doesn't steal this or take it as his own, but I remember him saying this, authority flows to those who take responsibility.
Yeah, it's really good.
This one's been, maybe
look, is that Churchill? I don't know. That feels like a, I'll have to look.
I wanted to say it's Joe Rigney. He had a book on leaders and emotional sabotage, but either way, yeah. I'm trying to remember, not Doug Wilson. Authority flows to those who take responsibility. The reason this one hits me hard, man, I think about this a lot as a father, as a husband, as a therapist, as a leader of the church. You know, I'm a preacher at the church, with the podcasts, everything else. Like, You will gain authority when you take responsibility. And the more you push responsibility off and it's like, oh, that's her fault, that's his fault, that's somebody else's, they'll take it for me. And it goes back to your point of kind of think about it from the next person up. Yep. Take responsibility. Think about these things.
Don't try to always do the easy thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Own it. Take a responsibility, and you'll find that authority starts to flow toward those who are willing to say, I own that. I'm here for it. I'm going to take responsibility over this. You see this at work. Well, nobody's cleaning the bathrooms. You get in there, you start cleaning the bathrooms. You get in there, you make that your responsibility, even if it's not. You make it your responsibility when the ball's being dropped. The next thing you know, you'll find more authority is given to you. Maybe not the getting the raise, or maybe you're not even seeing the superiors noticing it. You're not getting the promotion, whatever it is. I guarantee you the people around you will start looking at you as a leader. Exactly, so to right. me, same thing in the home. You push it off on your kids, push it off on your wife. Well, the youth minister's not doing XYZ. It ain't about him. You take responsibility. If you take responsibility in your home, you take responsibility for your wife's spiritual life and for your kids' spiritual life and for the way that the home is functioning and you setting the culture and all these things, they will respect you and authority will be given to you very easily. Now, you can look at it and go, well, Bible says she has to respect me either way. Yeah, but make her job easy. Make her want to respect you. And the way you do that is by taking responsibility for these things. So I'm very passionate about this one. All these guys that want to come in and take authority and act like they're big shots, and they take no responsibility. They are the first person to pass the buck when something goes wrong. Oh, it's them, it's them, it's them. You know, you see this with King Saul. Like, well, those people. No. You're the king here. Yeah. What are you doing?
Aaron with
the golden calf. Adam in the garden. Like, pushing off the responsibility. It's somebody else's fault all the time. Own it. Take responsibility. Authority will be given to you. If it's not, it'll flow to you. And if it is, you'll keep it and people will respect you for it.
I don't want to tread on that. I mean, he summed that up really, really well. I'm a big believer in that as well. Just basically, I guess, very quickly, I would say, if you put your head down and work hard and go the extra mile and serve others and you're kind and all these things, you'll get promoted. You will move up. Similarly to the, I love the cleaning the bathroom or cleaning the break room, or whatever example that Joe just brought up of like, I'm a believer. Yes, that will get noticed. And yes, people will see, oh, that person can handle more responsibility. Yeah. So guess what? More authority goes that direction, more privilege, all those things. So yeah, I think that's a great one. I'm going to give we both have an honorable mention. Yep. I think I'm going to give mine and then we'll get out of here, or Joe can give his and then we'll get out of here. The reason that this didn't make my list is because nobody really gave me this advice. I just read it somewhere and I was like, I love that quote. I think I brought it up early on in the podcast, but, nobody cares. Work harder is my honorable mention. Nobody cares. Work harder. I love that because it's the idea of what people want to see is your results. So work harder to get the results. Nobody cares about your feelings. Nobody cares about what, like, again, kind of the life's not fair. Nobody cares. Just work harder. It's kind of a fancy way of saying control what you can control.
Yeah.
You can't control what other people think. You can't control what other people, how much they care about you, your feelings, all those things. You can't control how hard you work. You can't control the results that you put out into the world, whether that be from a job perspective or fitness or whatever it is. Just work harder. Like, it again, kind of just a very fancy way of saying control what you can control.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. My honorable mention, I'm going to call an audible because I had a different one on here, but my dad used to always say, we're here, it's here. And it's a fun one.
He said that on Sunday.
Yeah, there you go. We're here, it's here. The whole point that he would kind of have is be present in the moment. The other thing, and this is, it has its downsides because now I'm Mr. Opportunity when it comes to, oh, this is the last time I'm going to be able to get the Shamrock Shake or whatever, we're here, it's here. But there was an element of like, we'd be on vacation and, oh, I can't possibly order that. That's too expensive, whatever. Look, man, we're here, it's here, is what he'd say, which is we're in this place. We're only in this place once. It's here. Let's go ahead and get it. Let's enjoy the time. Let's enjoy the opportunity. And it was just a way to stay present. Like, hey, we're here. It's here. Make it happen. Do what you're going to do in this moment. Have some fun with it. Again, we can get too carried away with it. But I always appreciated the levity that brought to these situations of like, oh man, I just don't think I could do that. Or maybe I shouldn't buy that one souvenir or whatever. And it was just kind of like, hey, we're here. It's here. So it's a weird one, but I wanted to add that as an honorable mention because I don't think it would make like the favorite advice, but I used it so much and I still kind of do to a certain degree of just appreciating where you are in life. And we're here, it's here. That's where things are taking place. We're right here in this moment. Stay present in this moment. Enjoy the moment. If you're going to buy the lobster roll in Maine, go buy the lobster roll in Maine. I don't think we can afford it. Like, you're here once. do it. If you can go to, I don't know, whatever it may be, something along those lines where it's like, this is the place to get it. You go to New York City and you're having a New York cheesecake. This is the place to get it. Eat it. We're here. It's here. Don't just go for the dollar menu because whatever it is, like, save up. If you can, obviously, save up. Enjoy the moment. Enjoy those things like that. So
I think of visiting Los Angeles with you and Jack at this point, a year and a half ago. Yeah. It was like 2023, a long time
September
ago.
September 2023.
And we visited the Staples Center or Crypto.com Arena, where the Lakers play basketball. And, the souvenirs in the shop and whatnot, pretty expensive. And it was the first trip where I was going to be able to bring something back for Jackson that I'd gone on by myself. And I thought of that, like, I don't care how much it is. I'm just going to go ahead and buy him the – they didn't even have a LeBron shirt. It had to be an Anthony Davis one who – not on the Lakers anymore. But anyway, it got me thinking, like, I'm the biggest believer in being financially responsible and not making dumb purchases. But do you really think when I'm hit at 90 years old, I'm going to look back and be like, I really should not have bought that Anthony Davis shirt for my son at the Staples Center 60 years ago. Like, of course not. And similar with the food. Like, 40 years later, you're going to be like, man, if only I hadn't bought that $80 filet, like – probably not. And so, again, don't be dumb with your money. Be smart with it. But still, think about 60 years from now. What are you going to look back on and regret? And it's probably not going to be the great experience with your family. Again, food, souvenir, travel thing, getting to go to the top of the Space Needle, whatever it is. And so I like
the moments matter. This has been fun. This is our favorite advice. If you have great advice, obviously join the Discord. Make sure that you join the Discord and let us know.
Link in the description.
Link in the description or comment underneath the YouTube video, whatever it is. Get a hold of us. We'd love to know your favorite advice, some things that you found. And to be honest with you, I think it would actually make for a ton of fun or make for a great episode. It'd be a ton of fun if we had like a bunch of these.
Yeah, because we could react to them.
And then we could react to them and we can either do shorts or maybe we even do another episode of top advice from our listeners and from our watchers and such. So I don't know, just thinking off the top of our head here. But make sure to join the Discord. Make sure to check out the merch. I got the shirt on right here.
The shoes.
Yeah,
The shoes
are not in the store, sorry. But make sure to check out our merch and anything else.
Don't think so.
This has been episode 111 of the Golly Amen podcast. We'll talk to you again next week.